What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Today
We Can't Stop Snapping. Awesome episode for you guys today. We are in the wake of enormous meta shifts and lots of changes that we are going to be breaking down. What are the survivors? Who are the true winners and losers of all the shifting that has happened in Snap? What are the best decks to play right now? Looking forward to diving into this with you, Brad. I saw you were testing some spicy new decks and maybe had some hot win streaks. What's the winningest deck for you at the moment?
It's actually just various versions of Sarah Control. We tried a Toxic Sarah version with your Luke Cage, your Hazmat, and stuff like that. And of course, Man-Thing. Even US Agent make an appearance in there as well. Surprisingly, he's been pretty solid. And then there's a classic take on it with like your Hitmonkey Mysterio, just Enchantress, Shang-Chi, and like we did really well with both these lists.
Pull
that up right now.
Red Guardian, hotly anticipated for both of us. Think he lived up to the hype?
Yes. I ranked him number two this month, Teddy. I believe you were the same.
Yeah, we ranked him number two, but two different number ones. I had Zemo at the top.
So you had Zemo at the top. I had the boy, the myth, the red boy himself, Red Hulk at number one.
Yep.
This is the classic control list featuring Red Guardian, of course, with your Kitty Pryde, Angela stuff. This just looks like a year ago list for the most part.
The Omega Red is the Brad. How you know it was a Brad deck?
So here's the thing. We tried Miss Marvel at first, but Mysterio made Miss Marvel really awkward often. Because you want to put your Lizard or your Maximus, or we've tried like Mirage and stuff like that too for like info, which actually Mirage won us some games, but we end up leaning towards Lizard. Cut Miss Marvel, but I wanted that extra power output that the control decks typically lack. So we tried Omega Red. Omega Red's surprisingly really good. I will say 5 out of my 13 losses for sure were because I fucked up on priority with Omega Red.
Okay, because Omega Red gave you priority?
Correct. Like I did the math wrong and I was like, oh, we can do this. We can make this work. And then I was like, I got to put the Omega Red now because I don't have the window to play him next year. I'm thinking of like playing like, you know, Shang-Chi and stuff and like Shang-Chi Maximus, whatever, if I didn't have Sarah. Right. And I just was a little off on math. I saw one thing grow up when I thought it would grow up a little bit differently, or they played something differently, or they just pass for no reason. I was just like, and then I throw a priority. I'm like, well, I know they have a Red Hulk.
Yeah.
I can no longer Shang-Chi it.
But exactly.
It's a cool list.
It does seem very cool.
Number two.
I think that the big shot here for saying that Red Guardian did live up is that Silky Move was like the deck as soon as he released, and now it's nowhere. Because Angela losing out to Red Guardian is like almost game over right there by turn three.
That was my favorite thing to snipe with, honestly, was Angela. Because the great thing is like,
because he comes out on curve.
Exactly. And that's what makes him, in my opinion, the second best tech card in the game behind Shang-Chi. He's jumped all the way for me for that. Simply because you actually are happy to play him on curve and just let him be a stat. At that point, it'd be a 3/5. If you can snipe an Angela or a Morbius or a
That's the other thing, discard has largely disappeared for me as well. Like,
yeah,
I'm not seeing it. I think literally Red Guardian killed a lot of these decks that had been totally fine in the meta before and now are just too risky.
I agree. It's just like he's just really good. And you look at his the cards you would compare him to. I think first people lean towards Rogue as like a thing of like a direct one-to-one comparison because they're very similar.
Yep.
But the thing is, Rogue is a lot narrower, hits ongoings. She does steal the ongoing, so that is a big portion of it.
Yeah.
So you get the benefit of it. But I think the fact that she's not as reliable, only hits one type of card, and not really a card you ever play on three.
Right.
Like, what ongoings do you ever steal? Like with Rogue on three, maybe like a.
If I see Morbius, I take it because I know I'm not going to have another target. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Morbius and like Ravonna, I think.
Yeah.
But even Ravonna is like an iffy one because it's either goblins or negative.
Iron Man might be coming, so you might want to hold it.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that might be a So, but then you can just play Red Guardian to get the Iron Man later anyway.
And so, yeah, Rogue is a 3-2 if she's missing, and Guardian is a 3-5 if he's missing. And that's so much better. So much better.
Yeah, missing in the sense of, like, you still have a body in front of him to hit, right? If an empty lane, he's a 3-3. That's his very bottom floor.
I feel like how often, I was so curious, how many games have a completely empty lane from any player?
I've yet to do it, and I've played Red Guardian on 3 into an empty lane when I don't have priority several times and just sniped, because I'm like, this is where they play this card, right?
Yeah.
For sure, sure is where they play this card.
I mean, the locations can cue you into what you need, yeah.
Yeah, I think very good card. One of the best cards we've gotten in a long time. One of the most meta-impacting cards we've gotten in a long time, but in a sneaky way. Like, no one's going to sit there and be like, oh, where were you when Red Guardian dropped and changed the meta? No one's going to say that. But in reality, just his existence is altering the play rates of cards like Angela and cards like in this card, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. Because Red Hulk is going to be the flashiest card from this season, dropping in with just so much power. And because you get this ticking, like the mental affliction of knowing that he's scaling makes him very present in people's minds. But Guardian, I think, is having an enormous meta impact as well. So what I've been tooling around with is a lot of junk decks. I've got a very toxic junk list that has shot me up to the top 200 just over like the last 48 hours, which has been amazing. And now that I'm there, I'm hitting all of these like absolute top players, which that's a beatdown. Two of the top 20 players have hit me with the same, what I believe is the same deck. I haven't seen every card yet. So let's play a little game of finish that deck. Brad, you are my autofill. Is that what they call it in game, right?
Yeah.
I've got ideas. I have like a working prototype. And I think honestly, a lot of these slots that I'm missing are pretty flexible. The core of what the deck does is in front of us. You have the best two-card combo in the game, Sentry and Nihilist. That's your point-scoring shell. And then you're using Mockingbird Mysterio Debris to hold in a very cheap Mockingbird with this like junk. And then you have Valkyrie as a contingency for the Void, who also contributes to Mockingbird. Mobius, because it's you have space and he's generally good. How are we rounding it out?
So there's a list that's gone around. I believe it was Jeff Hoogland that came up with it originally. It was also Alex, the one that does the podcast with Cozy.
Yeah.
From the Snapchat. They also had a similar list. I've seen people credit both of them, so I don't know where it originates from. But there is a list that's gone around with Pixie. And the reason I'm leaning towards it's maybe Pixie is one of these last two cards. And then I think maybe two other one drops. Like, I would think Pixie, Spider-Ham, Iceman, or like Nico, something like that. Because of this Mobius. This Mobius feels so out of place here. The only thing I could think of the Mobius being in here for is to protect your Mockingbird, to always be lower. How often are you seeing Mobius on the other side of the board?
So what I do see a decent amount of Renslayer and negative decks. It could be kind of responsive to something in the meta. And that could also be like one of these players' tech choices. Is it like, I got extra spot, I'm going to run Mobius. I honestly, looking at like those three empty spaces, Red Guardian is definitely making a play for belonging in one of them. Now, if you do the Pixie, I understand you want to bring the one drops.
3-3 cost makes me a little sad, but yeah, I can see Red Guardian.
You also have Hazmat Luke Cage.
Yep.
And then if we want to just shift everything into basically the deck that I'm already running, you go Man-Thing.
There's also maybe Patriots in this?
Patriot could be. You are putting down Demon.
If you... Yeah, the Demon,
two Mysterio Illusions, two Rocks. And then you actually have the Void. If you pick the Void up with Valkyrie, it's a valid target.
Yeah, that they won't expect. That you Valkyrie the Void, and it's like, ha, he's a 5 power now. What if that's a 15 power swing there, Teddy.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm kind of into the Patriot idea a little bit. I don't think it's Patriot, but it seems really funny.
I mean, why not?
I don't know what else you would run, like maybe Squirrel Girl's in there, but I'm surprised you haven't seen Squirrel Girl. She would be in. You'd see her.
Yeah, I think that's like Patriot. Almost too much board spam then. Also, Cannonball always makes sense when you've got debris.
Yeah, sure.
Red Goblin, Green Goblin.
This is the list is your take. The one that I was thinking, not my take. This is the one that's actually going around.
Okay, yeah. I have seen this one.
Some people were cutting Polaris for Red Guardian. Now, I'm one of those people that have tried it. I'm actually 6-0 with this list, with the Red Guardian replacement in Conquest. I've gotten two straight golds.
Nice.
But for those in the audience and for those that watch this later on YouTube or Spotify, it's not because of this girl here. I would say maybe one out of every
audio listeners.
Yes. I'm sorry, audio listeners. Pointing at Pixie. Thank you, Teddy. It's not because of Pixie. I would say one out of every Conquest battle, like each, like between for rounds, like one round every total battle, she has an impact where I could say I won it largely in part of what Pixie did. I was telling you before we started, there was a game where I got someone down to the last two cubes. We were in double Olim on stream today, and they were playing like a zoo deck. They had no Shang-Chi in the list.
Oh, no.
And on turn three, after playing Pixie, I played Nico, who had the copy spell into a one cost Red Hulk. And I just, the second flipped and that Red Hulk copy added to my hand, I just see opponent retreated, gone, game over. It was so funny.
Oh, that's so good.
But you don't win because of Pixie more often than not. It's just, again, you already said it, Teddy. The deck that you're looking at here already has one of the best 1-2 punches in the entire game. I mean, if you wanted to, this is the best trifecta of cards, I think, in Snap. And I don't think it's really that hard to, argue against or arguing for, I guess.
Yeah, no.
Hood, Annihilus, and Sentry
might
be the best package we've ever had in the game.
It scores very reliably. Hood and Sentry have like countermeasures even if you don't find Annihilus. And the huge kicker is that you're done by turn 5. It's all affordable. And then your turn 6 is open to whatever you want. If you want a big
like
6
a
cost
giant
finisher,
Red Hulk.
Or if you want to be able to squeeze in something quote unquote more affordable, like Legion Demon, one of my favorite enders, really good. Which I think I might try Legion in this deck too. My first pick here is I'm going Green Goblin, Legion, Shang-Chi.
4 or 5 costs?
Yeah. Mockingbird is not a 5 cost.
Okay. Well, question for you, though.
Yep.
When White Widow inevitably comes out next week, are you dropping debris for her?
I would probably drop something else. I would love to have debris and White Widow.
See, I hate debris.
What?
I hate debris.
Why?
I hate her as a card. My board space is precious. Let me only deal with, like, mess with your board space.
Okay, so someone in my Discord was like, run Carnage. Because then you can kill a Mysterio Illusion a Rock and the Void.
Sure. I guess. You can do that.
But like this deck, I was playing same game with my Discord.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, you could. I kind of stopped. Like, I remember, like, 3 seasons ago, I wonder if it was it before Annihilus came out or the season Annihilus did come out? I was running a Carnage in my junk list, just as a backup plan to, like, kind of weave into the final turn.
Right.
Because sometimes on turn 6, like, if you've already Annihilus on 5 or whatever, you draw Sentry late and you go, okay, I'm just going to Sentry, Carnage, right? It was always fine. It always felt like, God, this should be something else in the deck, you know? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it works, and it has its functionality, but I just wish it was something else almost every time, even when it was doing its job.
It
felt like it wasn't the best thing to be doing.
The best thing to be doing is Annihilus. It is a very funny pull for Baron Zemo off the opponent, which would be the destroy Baron Zemo when you hit mill is crazy. Right now, I want to try this deck, but I'm at the same time very enamored with my more hazmat toxic focused one, which can get the negative power on the rocks and then Annihilus throws the rocks. So it's basically just playing old Annihilus if you hit that combo, which is so much fun.
Yeah, and Lloyd says Carnage is also a very funny Baron Zemo pull from my
opponent.
Like, just like you said.
Yeah.
And by the way, everybody, we are having our first ever public live episode to where free members of Patreon can join in. So yeah, those in the audience, welcome. Hello. Hello. And hopefully more people join as we go along. But yeah, I mean, this, you could do so many. It's funny. This game is actually more interesting than I thought it'd be off rip, based on the fact that it's just an Annihilus shell.
Yeah.
You can actually do a lot of interesting things with these last three spots.
Well, yeah, we went from everything from like Toxic Hazmat to Patriot to, you know, leaning more into Junk, lean into Pixie, energy cheat yourself. Like, it's so open.
It's fun. I love this combo of cards. I hope they never touch Sentryhood or Annihilus. I hope these live throughout they withstand the test of time for the rest of Marvel Snap.
Sentry Annihilus has always felt just a little unfair, but at the same time, it's been around long enough that now I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
Right.
I don't know. The more like options they bring in, there's always ways to play around it. When you're in the mental game, like in the trenches, you're like, it is a skill matchup. It's good.
Right.
It's good.
Well, here's the thing. So I think we talked about before, especially with the last patch, about the changes to Eliath and stuff like that, where I was like, it feels like they're trying to like say if a card has any semblance of a feels bad, they want to do their best to eliminate said feels bad. I've come around on Eliath, by the way. I think he's still very good.
Okay. Yeah,
probably underplayed at this point because people love dropping their toys the second that they get a quote unquote nerf.
Right.
Elias still wins you most games he would have won you anyway, and now wins you some games you shouldn't have won before.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially it's like so meta dependent on if people are looking for ability activations or if they're playing something like this and it's going to be Red Hulk and it's like, ah, my Red Hulk to your Eliath or Annihilus.
Hold on, you could run Eliath alongside Red Hulk. There's nothing better than the entire game. Your Red Hulk's growing. Your opponent's like, oh, he's got the Red Hulk, And all of a sudden you flip Eliath. Oh, come on. That's great. Anyway.
Yeah. Or play Red Hulk early because you're doing the Hope Red Hulk trick. And then, you know, they have Shang and you're like, no, my Eliath's got my back.
Correct. So my reason for bringing that up is just simply because the reason I don't think Annihilus fits that bill of something that they'll change is because looking at Eliath in the original state or Professor X when he was a 5-1, I'm sorry, 5-3, I apologize, and like all these other cards of that kind of vein, Annihilus doesn't fit that because you need specific counters for those other cards. Where Annihilus, you can counter just by playing the game. Like,
you change how you play a little bit, but it's your calculation on if you think it's worth it.
Yeah, you don't need a specific card to stop it. Now, there's benefits of having specific move cards like Jeff or Vision to clog the lane when they play Annihilus, have the void go away, and then you can move and put more stuff there later. But you can just commit and be like, yeah, slam this down, fill that lane. You have to beat me with actual stats instead of trying to beat with a void. So that's why I think that Annihilus is mostly fine. But you know what's not mostly fine, Teddy?
What's not mostly fine, Brad?
According to the community, it's the price of these things.
Oh, is the price of the emotes the little capitalists going off over here? What do one of these run me?
About $30. $30 United States doll hairs.
At least, can you? They were pretty generous to let us, once you own it, keep spamming it for free. Can you imagine if there was an extra price for spamming it?
Yeah, every time you hit the button, it's
if it was
like
Counter-Strike, it would be price per button tap.
Yeah, so these things cost 2200 gold.
Yep.
That is around $30 US.
Oh,
more in other like Canadian dollars, it's like $40 or $50 almost. Australian, it's a little bit more as well. So all that good stuff. Now, it's a little ridiculous to me that these are as expensive as they are, when at the end of the day, they are PNGs on a screen that do not have an impact on the game itself.
Well, so it's interesting because I think I've always said that I love how Legends of Runeterra is monetized very much around cosmetics. And so this is like one of Snap's avenues towards it. Now, one of the biggest things for Legends of Runeterra is you can customize your board and you get to show that off. And it's like obviously like a larger, more customized thing for you. And this is just that little emote. And because your opponent can mute it, that's the thing.
Correct.
Is you've paid this much. You don't know if your opponent is ever going to see this because they can just be tapping mute as soon as they see you. That's what is really crazy about these. Also, they don't have voice lines.
That too.
That's what hurts.
I would, if I have anyone that's watching or listening,
okay,
who does not agree with me, right? And they say, hey, it's cosmetics. You don't have to buy them. You know, not the card pieces. It's fine.
Sure.
Okay. Let me ask you this. You ever played Fortnite, Teddy, or anything equivalent?
What do you call equivalent?
I guess PUBG or Call of Duty.
I played, what was the wrestling one? Rumbleverse? I played a lot of Rumbleverse. Okay.
Were there emotes and stuff in Rumbleverse?
Yes.
Like you could like in Fortnite, you have like the dance emotes, right? That's the big thing.
Yep.
Okay. Imagine if Epic Games or whoever the studio for Rumbleverse was.
Yep, because they decided, shut it down fast.
Yeah, decided, hey, rather than allow you to get a skin for like, you know, a skin usually runs you $20, $15-$20 for a skin on average, right? And that's about what it is for, you know, that the 1200 for a super rare variant, that's about $15, right? Cool, going on 20. But here you go. Here's a dance. Here's the gritty you can do in Fortnite now. $30, please. You get no skin with it. You get no other things. You just get the dance for $30. And I want you to look me in the eye and tell me you would be okay with that as of someone who played any other game. Like a dance, just a little move or like you know how like in Counter-Strike you can inspect your gun? Imagine they sold you an inspect for your gun, but like stylized, or you do like a flip or something. Sure. And it's $30. Like,
no, the price tag is crazy, saying. But I mean, obviously the conversation is like the kicker for me is still like that it can just be muted from the opponent and the opponent will never see it. That's the huge kicker for me on not liking it in favor of it is that Snap is decently generous in the trickle of gold that they just give you.
Sure. It's still $30 worth though.
Yeah, but also they are straight up removing any terms of like actual practical account progression from gold. Like gold, it feels like they're transitioning into just your cosmetic currency. And so if you get this trickle, you're like, oh, so like I get to pick four free. I can either choose if I want variants or emotes a year based on however much you get. Or you can probably get more than that, but yeah.
The reason I bring that comparison between like the skins of being $15 and then like the dance being $30, that's what's happening in the game though. The highest priced variant for gold, not counting like paid bundles where you have the infinite bundle, it's like $100 or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. Right. The highest priced currency for gold in variants is 1200, right? So you're saying an emote, which does not affect your game pieces, the game pieces of which you can split, get cool crackle effects and stuff like that. And you can't mute those, Teddy. I can't mute your Kirby crackle split that you adore in your deck and say, oh, I don't want to see that. I'll always see that. So there's a sense of pride to that emote, right? Or I'm sorry, the variant. You're saying that the emote costs nearly double that variant? That doesn't make sense to me. I don't care that it costs anything, but it should be at the very least less. I would say make it 700 because 700 is still $10, Teddy.
Still $10, but at the same time, Brad, there is an element of like they get to create this whole economy themselves, right? It's a fictional economy with their own premium currency.
Mm-hmm.
And so having them be expensive means that people, when you pick something, you know that not many other people are going to have it. And then if you show it off in game, you know that not many people are going to see it unless they play you. So there's like an element to that that I do find appealing. Lloyd Gets Annoyed brings up that you do get free emotes by progressing through the albums, but a number of these that are now in the cosmetic shop are exclusive currently to the cosmetic shop. We don't know if they'll be introduced in other ways. And I guess that is the optimist way of looking at it, is that this is just the early wave, kind of like Nexus events, and then they're going to take feedback and bring it, weave it into the economy and other more accessible
ways. Do you
think
they'll ever lower the price?
No, but I think that there will be more free ways of getting it.
I was going
to
say,
like, I guarantee you something is going to get added to the Conquest shop consistently to be able to buy. And then maybe find other ways to work this into like caches and stuff like that.
It'd be cool if you could pull one of these into cash. That'd be great.
Also, what would, so you we're talking about how you could like split stuff. What if you could split emotes?
That'd be sick. Like an inked emote would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do a gold emote. I guess you'd have to make the whole emote itself gold.
But basically, yeah, if you could then like collect a small amount of currency per games you ran with a deck that had it slotted in, and then you got to split it into some kind of custom flair on it.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing with the albums, though, it's like you can at least progress for free, technically, through the albums just by, you know, playing the game. Eventually, you'll get all those variants at some point, whether you buy them or pull them. And you could say the same thing of like, eventually you'll get enough gold to buy an emote. Sure. Through your per season, 500 gold or whatever, stuff like that.
Another thing for you. What if they make it so when you craft your deck, you select one emote that will always show the first moment they load into game, and that cannot be muted. It'll just flash once, and then you're in game, right? And then there's one that happens at the end of the game once the match has been decided. That's a guarantee.
Like a hello, goodbye emote, essentially?
Yeah, exactly. You, and so it's just because right now there's a pocket, actually a majority of the community, that just thinks any emote is annoying. But if both sides just choose one that will only appear at the beginning and the end, I think then it kind of normalizes it and you get to show off these emotes. And you can choose to mute or spam in between however you want.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Actually, also, I would love that.
This we're veering off a little bit, but I have to ask you this because I've thought about this a few times.
Okay.
What do you think about emote reworks?
Reworking emotes?
So one thing I'm thinking of is, so you have this Agatha one coming out in June, right? Mm-hmm. And this Agatha one here, let me zoom in a little bit.
Oh no. Looks... Careful.
Looks like a ruder version of Miss Marvel, right? It's a more aggressive wink. It looks way more sarcastic. The thumb's pointing at you now. Like, okay. I feel like this is more toxic than Miss Marvel, right?
Okay.
So what do we need Miss Marvel for to fit that void? Especially when they wanted Miss Marvel originally to be like a good game thumbs up, right? Like, they meant it. Like, they wanted this to be a cool thing. So, like, what if they just took away the wink? What if they just reworked her and they got rid of the wink? Both eyes are open. I really think the wink being gone would actually make her seem way more wholesome.
I think that instead of giving the thumbs up, which can be taken as sarcastic or as your PG middle finger,
what about
she
a
needs
high five?
To be like, that's like a stop, though. She needs to be like giving you something. Like, what if she's offering a flower or like some little trinket, you know?
Right. Because the thumbs up does feel like a middle finger in its current form. I do think a wink goes a long way with that, though, to add the sarcasm.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why they thought the wink was a good idea. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it,
I think the artist just like playing with her lashes.
Yeah, probably. Like, if you just. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you could do like something like the fist bump where like she's doing a high five and like there's another hand she's high fiving, you know?
That's the next level, is you move the emotes to be close enough to each other that you have interaction emotes.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I just like imagine you rework some of these. Like, okay, like this is a great one for the hello, the Mr. Fantastic hello. There's a lot of these that are gonna, I think, be wholesome.
Devil Dino.
Oh, this Arisham approves is gonna be sick. When an opponent does a cool play and you go, oh yeah, like, that's great.
I got you.
But like then the Captain Marvel shrug is like, oh, that's gonna be toxic.
My favorite right now is just this is this magic with Doctor Strange that works for almost anything. Like whatever happens, I just like do this.
Which one?
Doctor Strange with the butterfly.
Oh yeah.
Is this a?
Do you have this one?
Yeah.
Nice. That's the Midnight Suns album. One, right?
Yep. Midnight Suns album. I remember. So it's sad.
Yeah, I don't have that one.
It's just like it could be anything, and it's just an uncommon one. So I'm like, yep. The opponent did an emote. I do this.
I love this Iceman. That's the one I use the most. Mostly because it took me like 2 weeks to get the Electrode appear in my shop. That was what I was waiting on. But I love it when like my opponent snaps and I just hit that, just like, oh god, oh, you're snapping. Like there's a lot of these that are great. I'm excited for a lot more to come out. I hope they get a bit more easier to acquire. I almost have the Sandman salty one. I'm two away from that album being complete. And I'm also three away from the Leader Too Smart.
Leader Too Smart.
Yeah. Those are the ones I really want right now.
Yeah.
Like the... And also, the Thinking Lad, I actually really want, because sometimes I genuinely do take the entirety of my clock to think of a play, especially in the late game, like turn five, turn six. So yeah. Like if someone hits me with that Miss Minutes, the waiting around one, I'll just reply with the Thinking Lad. It's like, hold on, I'm right here. I'm thinking.
I'm not rope snapping. I'm right. Thinking.
That doesn't even work anymore.
Yeah.
For the most part. So yeah. Yeah, I like it.
All right. You're giving the opponent anxiety with how long you're thinking. Exactly, well, Pepper.
Sorry. Not my problem. Okay, moving all on. All right.
So from once we get enough emotes in, maybe we can do a tier list of emotes or the emote meta. What about the real meta now?
Yeah,
the winners and the losers of the patch. I gotta say, Junk is feeling like a winner from my experience.
Because Lady Deathstrike feels like a genuine, solid plan B to Annihilus now. Where you prefer, I know, Valkyrie for the most part in that slot. I like the more power presented by Lady Deathstrike.
A wise man once said, points are points are points.
Yeah. And it also doesn't matter if you win by a mile or an inch. A win's a win. But you know what, Teddy? I like winning by a mile more often than an inch.
Yeah, you want to blow them away?
So I would like more power, please. I would like any opportunity to give more of a swing in my favor. And I think the ceiling of Lady Deathstrike is higher than Valkyrie's, because the ceiling for Valkyrie is just, you know, I get 12, you get 3, right? Lady Deathstrike could just be, you get 0, I get a lot more. Like, right. Like, I don't know, like just the power output and the swing in that sense. This is like the far and away the biggest winner for me from this patch was Lady Deathstrike. Now we've had time.
No, I'm shocked because initially seeing the changes, I was like, Lady Deathstrike, they're just going to wait for like another final form or a new card to get released where she's actually playable. But she's the card that I've seen the most. Mm-hmm. I saw a little bit of Strong Guy and a little bit of Sandman right around the patch releasing. Red Guardian scared away discard, and then the Sandman ramp has also vanished now. But it's Lady Deathstrike that is stuck around. And I do love it. I'm seeing her more often in decks that are not destroy decks, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I just wish... I don't know. A Strong Guy, I feel like, should show up in more stuff. Let's backtrack.
Okay.
Biggest loser, right?
Zabu,
by far.
Yeah.
But I'm not shedding many tears over his demise.
I had it brought up on my stream. Is this the biggest nerf to a card all time? So that's putting it up with basically the Galactus rework.
And... okay, but the original Galactus was actually okay, the 6-7.
No, it was a mid Galactus from like the 6-2 to the 6-5.
No, it went to 6.7 before 6.5. Remember? The original change to Galactus was from 6.2 to 6.7. And then Eliath came out and they're like, Galactus is suddenly doing okay because of Eliath. So we're going to nerf Galactus's power to 5, which they should honestly put Galactus back to 7, in my opinion. But
at this point, if you wanted to be playable, yes. So yeah, we got original leader, Galactus, and Zabu. What's your biggest murder
it's,
of a card?
It's original leader. I don't think there's any competition. Original leader was bad. Arrow is still
all
okay.
Cards to one card.
Yeah, Arrow is still fine. Like Arrow is okay. I played her a little. She's fine.
Okay.
I would rather have Arrow in her current
she
state.
She didn't come up in any of our conversations about what to plug into these good card decks.
Sure. Because she needs, I don't know, she needs a little something. But I would rather have Arrow in her current state than the leader when he was at 6-7, everything to the right of him. But that meant the immediate right lane.
It was just weird.
Yeah, no one understood what it meant. I'm like, does that mean I can play him in the left lane and I get the middle and right lane? That's not too bad. No. You have to. You only get the middle lane. I think it's original leader. I think Zabu at least has the ability to still ramp into your combo-ish pieces like Wong or whatever. Or also with
the content creators went into this saying, oh, we got on-reveal synergies now, baby. I can craft a deck that will make, because there's no minimum one, free four-cost cards on the final turn. And they were able to do it. Obviously, it's not going to be competitive, but the on-reveal synergy means that there is some niche uses.
So do you think we talked about this before, about Zabu going up to 5. Do you think a 5/4, 5/5 on-reveal -2 is something we could consider?
Oh yeah, it's just like an alternate Sarah, basically. Instead of everything, it's only 4 costs, but it's a much more dramatic discount.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. I like that. I mean, make him a 4 cost, lower power, 4 cost that discounts 4 costs. There's just something
by
about
what?
That. By 2.
On review or ongoing?
Ongoing.
I'm a little wary of
it.
I'm a little wary of it. A little wary.
You know you'd love it.
A little scared of it, actually.
That means that you could go back to your... I mean, it's dangerous because then you just play Zabu into Sarah, right?
Right.
And then you have 1 cost, 4 costs.
And then 1 cost everything, pretty much, because the other stuff in your deck is 2 costs anyway.
Right. That might be too much. I wonder if there's an elegant way to write a clause.
I would the reason I think 5 and on reveal is a good way to put it, because then it's a direct competitor to Sarah, because now you can't go wave into Zabu into Sarah. I guess you can go wave into Sarah into Zabu at that point, but you're putting a lot of work in just to get this.
So just wave Sarah into anything has never materialized as like a good deck.
Right. So I think I also would love to see more competition to Sarah. I don't want her to get nerfed. I don't want her to change. I think she's great, and she's in a very good spot and has been for quite a while, ever since she went down from a 5/5 to a 5/4. However,
especially with Mobius here, right? Now that we have Mobius, you know, let them do some wild stuff with the discount decks. Give us some very different looks. And that -2 on a 4 cost was a very different look.
Yeah, so I like that idea. But if we look at the overarching meta entirely, the absence of Zabu has left a bit of a an open season, so to speak, right? So since the last patch, which was on the 10th, our top play decks are this toxic Sarah Surfer list. We have Silky
Smooth.
When
was the last time we had such a wide open meta? It was like back before Thanos took over, I feel like.
Yeah, I think you're also no Thanos in these. So like let's run through real quick. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4 different decks in the top 4.
So
6 decks.
Destroy, discard, Silky Move, and a Sarah deck.
Yep. Hella, negative.
The fact that negative
decks
is good, I'm so happy to be proven wrong on that. I didn't think he was gonna make it, but he made it. Machamp.
Shuri making a comeback because Red Hulk Shuri is just doing, good.
Shuri doing fine.
Because you have the ability to go Hope Summers into Shuri into Red Hulk into Taskmaster now, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, why not?
Then you have Loki still doing pretty good. Some Junk. Red Guardian should be in there. You got Junk. You got Hela baby. Tribunal. You got Phoenix Force. You got, you know, just... And then we get some repeating offenders. Galactus is in here. Electro Ramp should not be.
I mean, we've dropped off here. But, I mean, just that clump that we saw at the top.
We're still at 4,000 games played. That's still a decent... You're still likely to see these.
What I find a little surprising is the High Evolutionary missing as well. Like, the big bads are gone.
Yeah. Well, how is High Evo doing? Let's take a look.
I think he's doing okay, is the thing. Like, I think it's a fine deck if you want to pursue it. People got caught up in trying to run U.S. Agent in it, and I don't know if that's really the way to go. Like, just the Hulk drop, I feel like it's still fine.
Yeah, and then this other one is doing Moon Girl stuff?
The Moon Girl one is, yeah, the Moon Girl She-Hulk. I've seen this. It works.
Yeah, but...
If they don't play Mobius. It works if they don't play Mobius.
Then there's this version.
That's so sad. Look at that. Zero average cube gain.
Minus one.
Losing average cube. But these are also really small sample sizes. I'm like, so people are just confused. Not playing it.
Okay, hold on, hold on.
People are just not
Suddenly, playing it. We're up to 0.35, 0.30. I know we're only at 270, 240, 260.
Yeah, these are just unique flavors that like specific good players are choosing to use or not.
Yeah, I don't know. This feels
Is the filter
weird.
Including infinite or is it only pre-infinite?
It's including post-infinite. So let's do
it is
just
a 100 plus.
Just post-infinite. The best one is plus.
Oh, it's going to be all smaller
0.13.
Sample sizes.
Oh. Interesting. So far the highest one is this 0.28. Oh, what is
it's
this?
Only 150 games. So
oh,
I mean,
what is this? What is this?
Beautiful thing.
Negative 1.72 average cubes per game.
Yep.
It's running Jeff, Negasonic, Cyclops, Baron Zemo, Shuri, High Evo, Iron Man, Sarah, Galactus, Thanos, Red Hulk, Death. You're just running the High Evo just for the Cyclops?
The rules of playing this deck is that you have to snap as soon as you start it.
Clearly.
Playing every big bad.
If we did not including infinite and just did the journey, because someone asked,
okay,
it's more mostly the same, kind of just middle of the road.
Yeah.
Meh. Makes me a little sad, but otherwise, I mean, we're not saying Haivo is bad. I think you are correct. And people got caught up in the release of US Agent, wanted to make that work with the affliction and stuff like that. And then kind of just honed in on like really heavily on these affliction versions of High Evo with A-bomb and stuff like that, even with or without US Agent, and kind of left to the side the She-Hulk, regular Hulk versions, which I still think are the better versions.
Right.
It's just they can't leverage Leech anymore, I guess. I mean, you could.
Well, you can, because it's still the idea is it protects Limbo, and anything that's going to attack Limbo is going to get blocked by Leech. So,
you know what else protects Limbo?
What protects Limbo, Brad?
Kang on 6.
Oh, Kang on 6 protects Limbo? It at least protects your cubes when you know you got to retreat or not.
If they're changing Limbo.
Exactly.
And it could draw you a card.
Well, yeah, once in 12 games it draws you a card, I think. Yes.
Correct. That is, I think that math checks out.
All right, run the fourth big bad. That's why it's not in the meta. They haven't found the fourth big bad for the deck.
Oh, you're telling me the key to winning is just run all the big bads?
Yeah.
High Evo,
because Arisham
Thanos,
is going to be in there
Galactus,
next.
Galactus, Kang.
Yep.
And then eventually Arisham.
Yep.
A casual 30 card deck.
Why not? I play Magic in Snap.
I got all day, baby.
Shuffling. This is optimum.
It's like the Yu-Gi-Oh players that brought the briefcase of like the thousand
to waste people's
the thousand
time.
Card deck. Yeah,
and the majority of effects require them to shuffle their deck. That's the kickers. Yeah. You see the pictures,
yeah,
and then you realize they built the deck with as many effects as possible that would require them to shuffle.
Yeah, they basically intended to just draw every round.
Yeah.
That sounds beautiful. But yeah, I think the meta is in a really good spot.
If you run Evo Arishem, will Evo update any Arishem pulled cards?
No.
I assume not.
Because these both happen simultaneously. I know they're the little effect that they'll inevitably have for Arishem and Haiva and stuff like that in the beginning of the game will come one after the other, but they happen simultaneously. So anything that you pull with Arishem is happening at the exact same time that Haiva is making those changes. So technically they're not seen. And it's Haiva specifically says,
cards starting in your deck?
I believe so.
Or is it just at the start of the game?
Start of the game, unlock the potential of your cards with no abilities. So the keyword, your cards with no abilities, makes you think they have to be in the deck.
You kind of assume, cards that started in your deck rather than cards added to deck by Arishem.
And also, I'm not going to knock Second Dinner for not being specific with that wording, because I don't think they ever really anticipated
Arishem releasing.
I guess not. Well, they did. They were definitely working on Arishem, but like this being an issue.
No, yeah.
My one bone.
It'd be very funny if it worked, though.
It would be. It'd be actually great. Just randomly draw another Hulk. My one bone to pick is this godforsaken list.
A little toxic Sarah.
Yeah. So I hate this list.
Combo.
I hate this list mostly because through all of my experience in card games, the years and years I've spent playing various games from Yu-Gi-Oh! To Magic to Snap to Arcana to even One Piece, Dragon Ball Super. I played everything under the sun. Pokemon.
Yep.
There's no way this is the correct list. There is no shot that in the year of 2024, our Lord, that a uber greedy hazmat surfer Wong abs man Odin list is the premier correct list to run if you're trying to run Surfer.
To see a 0.3 cube gain on average, which is pretty spicy that much.
Cool. Let's put a post infinite.
Ouch.
Yeah, you
post
like that?
Post infinite is not there.
Oh, it's like suddenly when you play decent players, it's an ass deck.
Well, it's also like that is the perfect deck to abuse bot mentality because you're low tempo, and so they snap into you, and then you hit them with all the effects.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It's like the game plan you want to use against bots just naturally. I will say that I think playing greedier decks is correct to climb on ranked.
I agree with you.
That style of deck is what often finds success in best of ones.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, I still see it. It's still the most played deck post-infinite, right? According to numbers. My point, and I see it a lot in Conquest too. I'm sorry. I beat the hell out of this deck in Conquest. It's not hard to beat. It's really not. I'm just like, do they have the combo?
Yep.
Okay. Do I have Luke Cage in my deck? Maybe. Right. Or do I have Red Guardian to just turn off Wong? Or Lady Deathstrike to eat the Wong?
The Lady Deathstrike is brutal against this. Oh, man.
Or you Lady Deathstrike.
They set up Wong Mystique. They're like, I'm about to turn on. And then Lady Deathstrike claws to the face.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care. How do we go from the nice thing of play Sarah, play your Brood and your Silver Surfer, and play Shaw? That's great. But you can also include Killmonger, Nova to have a counterplay and something that actually benefits from that counterplay to hit one drops. You can put Red Guardian in the list now. You know, you don't need to run Mystique. You don't need to run Magic. You don't got to do this. Stop it. Just play a better Surfer list, a more consistent Surfer list, an honest Surfer list.
The Mystique is the one that makes it really, really greedy.
Yeah. Right.
And
the Odin. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Well, yeah. But when you're playing Wong with these kind of on reveals of Ironheart, Surfer, Hazmat, I understand where the Odin is coming from, and it will win you games. I do think that this deck is going to fall off. Part of its success was that initially nobody was running a Wong-Odin combo, and so, I don't know, people just didn't expect the Odin, and then it's like, yeah, that just will win if you didn't have an answer. Also, Cosmo is not around right now.
Right. So. I was about to just pull up his play rate.
Yep.
5.3% popularity. That's only post-infinite, though. Let's expand our horizons a bit, because I think maybe post-infinite players might look at that and be like, you know, I should play more Cosmo. Okay, Teddy, do you have the over or under on Cosmo's play rate, including pre-infinite?
Including pre-infinite?
Yeah, so that we just saw 5.5 or whatever, 5.3 in post-infinite only, including 80 to 100 now, 80 to 99. You have the over or under?
Under.
I agree. I think it's going to be like 2.5. I think it's going to like drop 2.5, off.
2.5, I was going to go 3-something.
Oh, we're wrong. It's the over. It's 7.5, including that.
Interesting.
Do you see Cosmo ever?
No. I mean, I did. There was a blip where Loki was running Cosmo, but now that's gone.
Yeah, there is the Loki list of Cosmo. I see sometimes Cosmo in Tribunal on occasion.
I don't even see that.
I've seen it a couple of times.
Okay.
I've run into exactly one Spectrum list in the last week, so that was cool.
How'd that go?
I won because
they played Spectrum.
Well, no, it's
they played a Spectrum.
Played Spectrum, all right, but I played Enchantress.
Ooh, Spectrum can't buff what doesn't have an ongoing. Same thing with Red Guardian being able to attack him. Ah, man, I love Red Guardian.
So yeah, Red Guardian's great. Just hitting ongoings is great. Hitting literally anything with Red Guardian is actually pretty good. Yeah, I like the meta. I'm happy with it.
No, I'm really happy with it as well. If you have somebody who is on the cusp of hitting infinite, but they feel like they're hitting a wall, what deck would you say, hey, give this a try?
I would...
Obviously, the conversation is normally, you know, more complicated than that. But
right. Because it does come down to like piloting ability and stuff of like, what do you feel comfortable using?
Yeah.
I mean, this the Silky Smooth deck isn't the most complicated deck ever to pilot. And I think you can definitely close the gap from like your 80s into the mid late 90s with it. I don't feel like it's the best finishing infinite deck, though. Just because I think it comes down to a lot of like a lot more 50-50 games.
It's like it's the mind game of I'm moving Vision and Jeff and then I'm dropping Red Hulk, but right. Where kind right. of thing, right? Yeah.
So that's my thing with the move stuff. So I think this is a great journey deck, like to get there, like to get you to the top of the mountain.
You have to be prepared for major tilts one way or the other. Like some correct. Of those big snap games you're going to win and some of them you're going to lose and you got to let it balance out. Ride the tilts. So if you have strong mental, run it. If not, maybe find something else that's a little more consistent.
I do think...
I think discard. I go like classic Apoc discard. That guy is consistent.
It is very
as long as Red Guardian's not hunting too many Draculas.
I lean towards, like, as far as a list goes, to just get over the hump. I think either Hela or Hela Tribunal or Tribunal, like one of those decks. That's kind of where I lean. It's just really good efficiently just stealing 8 cubes. And that's what you want to hit infinite.
Gotcha. I love that we both picked discard, but very different play styles and decks. I will say I've had just unmitigated success with this junk deck. Like if you could run junk, like run junk.
This one?
Not that one, my version, but you could run that one.
Yeah, you could run it. Yeah, that's what's great about metas like this where it's just wide open and you can just play whatever you want. As long as you're good with the list, just play it.
Destroy works pretty well if you want to hit a groove. But yeah, I think in this one, like deck wise, those are some great recommendations. And then if you're on that climb, just start being very cagey with retreating when the opponent snaps. Take a very critical audit of your gameplay. How many times did they snap, you stayed, and then you lost?
Yeah.
If it is not a good ratio, retreat as soon as they snap, and then your cubes will thank you.
Yeah, especially if you do play a deck like Hela or Tribunal, honestly, unless you are 200% sure that your combo is going to go off and you've discarded a good amount of cards, or you're going to get your big numbers with Tribunal, leave.
Yeah.
Leave the game.
Exactly. Like,
that's the only way you should stay. And you can take one, two, or three games in a row of losing one or two cubes at a time. But the ones you win, you're going to get 4 to 8 cubes at a time. So it will balance out and you will eventually hit infinite.
Exactly.
People tend to forget that infinite is not a test of your card game skill as much as it is a test of your understanding of when to snap, when to leave.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. When I'm playing in like the top 500 range of, well, when I'm playing in that range, I get matched up with people who are below 5,000, kind of in the 5,000 to 1,000. And then I see these categories of like the really high level players. The really high level players are very cagey on retreating, snapping, and then like quick reactions.
Well, looking ahead as we look to close out this wonderful week, next week is going to be White Widow.
Part of me is actually like, I found junk now, and now everybody's going to be playing junk, Brad. Maybe, the mirror is interesting though, so I'm into it.
Maybe you lean into like, I don't know, a bounce version.
I definitely want to try bounce with this because at the two cost, I mean, guys, taking away two portions of their board just guaranteed is so brutal. And you can still play Black Widow and White Widow. There's nothing stopping you. You can use debris, goblins. I mean, if you use debris, don't bounce debris. Like, bouncing debris is the greedy side. You just play debris and you play White Widow twice. That's four spaces gone from their side of the board. They're playing with only, they lost a third of their board to zeros.
Right. I actually like her a lot with Red Guardian. Because
Red Guardian will take away the ability of the kiss, meaning that it will never buff itself when the location is full.
Yep. So it'll then be a guaranteed -2 instead of a maybe -4.
What? A guaranteed -2 instead of a maybe -4? It'd be a -6 because he's hitting it at -4.
It has ongoing. It's a 0/0. Widows goes to 0/0. Pull it up right now. Ongoing gets -4 unless the location is filled.
Okay, I got you.
So
its base is 0/0, it goes to, okay.
Yeah, so my thinking is like you hit this with Red Guardian and you're like, yeah, cool. This is just a guaranteed -2 on your board now.
Gotcha. So any kind of, you, as someone who got kissed, you want to disable it.
Correct. Yeah, so like Enchantress could be cool there. Really, that's actually it. You can Lady Deathstrike it from your own end to get rid of it. So like there's ways to get around it. But
And then destroy, right? Any of the Predators to junk are still going to do well against White Widow.
I'm admittedly a little less excited about White Widow than I was originally. And I think...
Why is that, Brad?
Just the more I think about her as a card, I recognize that she's strong, but she's narrowly strong in like kind of specific ideas like junk, like just lane fill. Like you could, I guess, do like Jean Grey stuff and force them. And then you can put like, you know, Mojo and stuff and like, cool, you got rid of your -4, but I gained +6. So it's still a 2-point swing technically in my favor. So there's interesting things you can do, I suppose, within that scope. But looking at the rest of the month, everything else is mostly generically strong in some capacity to where they don't need as much of a supporting cast, where I think White Widow really wants a supporting cast. Even Valentina. Yeah. Of course, she's going to be great in Loki, right? But maybe just an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. type of random card list is good enough. Like getting a, imagine you pull Infinite and you have a 4/17, you just skip 3 and you're like, look at that. Or a Red Hulk. Yep. A Red Hulk dropping him down
back up,
goes right back up. One buff from Red Hulk is a, now he's 12 power. He's already above his own rate. So
Yeah, well, we know Red Hulk should get tweaked down just a little
probably.
Bit.
Probably. Yeah. I wouldn't
Lloyd
be
gets
shocked
annoyed
if
brings
it was
up
a,
yeah. Is this three cost Viper's time to shine, being able to push a kiss back? That would be incredibly funny. I think it's going to be too inconsistent with the junk game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we get a one-dimensional junk meta with a lot of mirrors, then Viper could actually have a spot with like you pushing stuff back and forth. Like if you know they're bringing goblins and other stuff, it'll free up space on your side of the board, take up space on their side of the board. Could be a good option, actually. Or it could be that your junk deck is going to adapt and run Carnage. Lady Deathstrike clearing both sides in the mirror is interesting to think about, but I might want Carnage to make it one-sided, depending on how games shake out. We'll have to see what her impact really is. But going back to what you were saying about general use, Black Widow at a two cost was general use because
correct.
She took away the draw and she took away their board space, and that could be good. It was great in junk and good anywhere. And this is great in junk, good not really anywhere else.
I am interested in maybe a Darkhawk deck that can curve like Korg into this, into like Black Widow on three.
Does she really synergize with Black Widow? If anything, if you're not all in on junk, there's anti-synergy to giving them extra ways of filling space.
Sure, but you're giving them a negative one. So now if they fill up that lane, they have two cards taking up negative one total.
Yeah, which is tough. But what it means is they could play that negative one. I mean, yeah, if they're stacking it all on that lane, which I guess the idea is they would to try and fill it, is then they have to win through something giant.
And like you could still do the Darkhawk, you know, Sentry Hood Annihilus stuff too.
Bring in a little more junk. Yeah.
Right. Which that was already a successful deck. I don't know. I'm looking forward to her. I'm excited to play with her. But I don't know. The more I talk about her, the more I think about where she goes and stuff, the more I'm just like, I don't think she's gonna be like my favorite card of the month. Like, or even like up that. I think she's, dare I say, the second worst card of the month.
She's ahead of US Agent, but then behind Valentina.
I think Valentina's better.
I think Valentina
because I think
is
Valentina
better.
Is just generically strong of what she does and has the added bonus of just being insane in Loki decks.
Yes. No, I think Valentina is going to be good, but I currently put junk decks better than Loki decks. Mm-hmm. So I might go ahead and take the White Widow over Valentina.
Well, I guess maybe what we should do for our next episode is when they're both released. Yeah, we'll go into a friendly battle.
Okay.
We'll fight it out with White Widow and Valentina. And you're going to be real sad when I Loki you and I'm like, look who has the Annihilus now. Eh? Eh?
That specific matchup against each other is interesting to think about. That yeah. Loki taking the Annihilus at the end is pretty brutal.
Because then you can not ever fill your side with the for the White Widow, so it has the minus four. That way Annihilus does send it over, or at least destroy it.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it, Teddy.
All right, I'll take it.
All right, and thank you everyone for watching. This, again, was our first live open to everyone episode. We're going to be doing more of these in the future. We'll figure out what ways we're going to be implementing that in the future. But if you want to be able to watch every single week live, go to patreon.com/can'tstopsnapping. You can join as a free member, of course. We encourage that of all people from around wherever you're watching from. And of course, on top of that, you can go to youtube.com/can'tstopsnapping as well and go ahead and sub. Sub to our new YouTube channel. We have bonus content that typically goes on the Patreon, which looks like we're going to be recording Bounce this weekend, Teddy, most likely.
Yes, there may or may not be a fire Bounce track coming
right
to
so,
the content near you.
So that is going to be going on Patreon probably this weekend. And then we'll have that come to YouTube a week later. So if you want to see that early, go to Patreon. Otherwise, the only other place to see it is the YouTube channel. So youtube.com/can'tstopsnapping. I think it's going to do it for us here, Teddy.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for tuning in week after week and showing up live. We love to have that audience interaction because Brad and I are both, like, we do it for you guys.
Yep.
We also just love it. Like, we will we'll stay here, but we love having the extra support and the extra guidance on, you know, where to direct the content. So don't stop snapping, guys.
Keep stop snapping. Yep. Changing the name, baby. Trademark it. Bye, everybody.
Can't Stop Snapping is a podcast hosted and produced by Brad Seffert and Teddy Ninja, originally created by Michael Thurman.